Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, November 17th, 2022. Bear Takes Up Residence in Terlingua Ghost Town by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Terlingua. Over the past 2 weeks, Terlingua's newest resident has been the talk of the town, causing controversy and leaving a mess in the streets. A male black bear, or two depending on who you ask, has been snacking on trash in the ghost town, prompting a heated conversation about how humans and bears can coexist as both populations grow in the Big Bend. Don Baucom of DB's Rustic Iron Barbecue was the first to document the bear. He and his team typically put meat on the smoker late at night and return in the morning to prep for lunch service. Around 9 a.m. on November 7th, the crew spotted the bear feasting from the dumpster. "He was just helping himself," Baucom said. "My employees were scared. They didn't know what to do." Baucom reported the sighting to Texas Parks and Wildlife and the Brewster County Sheriff's Office, which recommended making a ruckus to scare him off. Nothing seemed to work. The bear returned daily, either at dawn or dusk, scattering garbage in his wake, then signing his crime with a steaming pile of scat. They eat, then they're done. "For some reason, they leave a nice surprise every time," he said. One night, a deputy was driving by DB's and intercepted the bear during his nightly buffet. "We caught him red-handed," Baucom said. The bear resisted arrest, and the deputy fired off a round of rubber bullets toward the non-compliant perp. The thick-skinned burglar was unbothered. He stuck around to serve himself seconds. The ghost town bear likely comes from a long line of tenacious Big Bend residents. As the region was settled by farmers and ranchers in the early 20th century, the black bear population was hunted out of Texas and pushed south of the border. For almost 40 years, there were no bear sightings on this side of the river. That changed in the late 80s when tourists and park employees started reporting a female with cubs in the Chisos Mountains. Nobody knows exactly when or how, but the bears crossed the border and happily started repopulating themselves in the Big Bend National Park. The Chisos bears are a rare and near miraculous conservation biology case study. Since then, there have been numerous sightings of bears north of the park. Bears have been spotted in the Christmas Mountains and on the security camera of an ATM in Alpine. Back in June, a black bear was hit on I-20 in Reeves County. Some experts believe that the bear population has reached maximum capacity in the Chisos, and some of them have had to move beyond the park to find the resources they need. The main problem with the bears starting to repopulate their historic homelands is that there are now thousands of people living in the Trans-Pecos. When the bears disappeared from Texas, there was barely anyone living in the ghost town. Now it's a bustling tourist hub. Locals have been tracking this bear's path on social media. He's been spotted behind the Talbert cook-off grounds and across the highway at Desert Sports. He's ransacked the dumpsters at Taqueria El Milagro. A tourist eating lunch on the patio at the High Sierra watched him stroll toward Kempf Road. Later that day, someone posted a photo of the bear traipsing through the teepees at Base Camp Terlingua. This bear doesn't seem to mind being the center of attention. He showed up during one of Ghost Town's peak visitation seasons at the tail end of the twin chili cook-offs and Dia de los Muertos, and just before the crowded Thanksgiving weekend. Cigar Springs Ranch owner-operator Jeff Majewski has a theory that the Terlingua bear is so bold because he migrated out of the Chisos. Bears in Big Bend National Park are exposed to people from a young age who are legally prohibited from hunting or harassing them. They're park bears, he said. They have no reason to fear people. In the past 2 weeks, Majewski has had its own close encounters with a bear, which he thinks is distinct from the Ghost Town bear. His bear, he insists, is chubbier and younger than the one photographed a few miles up the road. One day he came home from the store to bear drinking out of his goat's water trough. He saw that the bear had also left a claw puncture in a stainless steel feed bucket. Flustered, Majewski attempted to scare it away. I was trying to find a rock. It was the first time I couldn't find a rock in the stinking desert, he said. The next time the bear came to visit, Majewski was about to let out his goats when he found them all huddled by the gate in a panic. The bear had posted up in a corner of their pen. After a heated exchange, the bear fled the scene by gracefully hoisting himself up and over a 9-foot fence post. Majewski, who has lived at Cigar Springs off and on since the late 80s, has had plenty of tussles with mountain lions, but never with a bear. His animals aren't pleased with their new neighbor. It's like when a lion comes around and there's that eerie quietness, he said. You'll be sitting outside looking at the moon, and the chickens and goats that make the little noises just go silent. Back in the ghost town, longtime resident and guest house owner Betty Moore has watched her tranquil corner of the neighborhood become ground zero for the war on bears. Both Brewster County Sheriff's Office and Texas Parks and Wildlife vehicles have camped out on her road, cruising back and forth all night. I'll be watching TV and the searchlights keep coming in through my window, she said. I tell you, it's like the Keystone Cops. Moore remembers first hearing about the bear on the new pickleball court down by the boathouse. Around the same time that Baucom snapped the first picture of the bear, legendary local musician Butch Hancock stopped by the court. He told us to keep an eye out, she said. That was the first time I heard about it. The situation has escalated dramatically over the past week and a half. A friend of one of Moore's tenants spotted a deputy chasing the bear down the road, and soon after the bear left a crime scene at her dumpster. On Monday night, shots rang out. I don't know if it was a blank or a rubber bullet, but it was a loud shot, she said. I watched this one guy take off running as fast as he could, and then the truck came around after them. It all lasted for quite a while. Texas Parks and Wildlife, TPWD Wildlife Diversity Biologist Krista DeMeer, has been distributing business cards around town. She's been the go-to public liaison for folks who want to report sightings. DeMeer explained that the shots fired by TPWD in the ghost town are paintballs and don't harm the bears. The paintballs are part of a process called hazing. Animal hazing isn't the same hazing making headlines at your local frat house. It's the technical term for providing negative behavioral conditioning to wildlife who have put themselves in dangerous situations. The paintballs establish physical contact with the bear without authorities having to get too close. It just means you make the situation uncomfortable, Demir explained. She encouraged locals to take a two-pronged approach by storing and securing their trash as carefully as possible and by shouting, clapping, or banging pots and pans, anything to teach the bear to associate human smells with scary noises. The paintballs are an enhanced level of hazing that should only be carried out by professionals. They serve the dual purpose of startling the bear and marking the animal to officially determine if there's more than one roaming the area. As of Monday night, the ghost town bear has been successfully marked. We didn't intend to do a rainbow on the bear, but the bear is currently a mixture of green, yellow, and blue, Demir said. Moore doesn't think hazing alone will solve the problem. She's had plenty of experience with the practice in her former life as a field biologist. Once upon a time, she was tasked with hazing condors who had become fond of attacking tourists' shoelaces in the Grand Canyon. Some onlookers were alarmed by her methods, which mostly involved throwing rocks. She had to explain that the rock throwing was sanctioned by science. When the bear came to visit Moore's dumpster, she noticed that the plastic lid had been caved in. Apparently, the bear had climbed on top of the dumpster and used his weight to access and roll around in that night's dinner. "I think the solution to our problem is the dumpsters," she said. "As long as food is available, it's going to keep coming back. It's only a matter of time before it finds the starlight." Because Terlingua is unincorporated, locals have to contract with private disposal companies to install and collect trash from dumpsters on their properties. There are currently two disposal companies that serve Terlingua: Texas Disposal Systems and Republic Services. Moore contacted Republic Services to request a bear-safe dumpster. "Unfortunately, metal lids and bear-proof lids are currently not offered in your area," Republic's customer service team wrote back. Brewster County Precinct 2 Commissioner Sarah Allen Carlando posted on Instagram about her own experience trying to negotiate for new dumpster lids. She reached out to Republic and got a different response. "The only negative is we are very limited to the metal lid containers," Lisa Gonzalez at Republic Services wrote. "But please have your constituents call me, and I can definitely see how I can help." Republic Services did not return a request for comment by press time. Bacham, whose barbecue-filled dumpsters are particularly fragrant, has been leading a similar charge among Texas Disposal Services customers. He's asked company reps to order metal dumpster lids for Terlingua and has encouraged business owners around the ghost town to do the same. "The more businesses they hear from, the better chance we'll get them," he said. In the meantime, what's next for the ghost town bear? Some locals worry about what will happen if the hazing doesn't work. "A fed bear is a dead bear," goes the old Park Service adage. Others worry scrappy Terlingua locals will exercise frontier justice. "Hunting season is just around the corner," an anonymous op-ed in the Terlingua Moon pleaded. "You know someone will shoot this bear." Moore echoed their concerns. She also believed some of the difficulty in tracking the bear is that he blends into the dark Terlingua nights. "I'm just afraid someone's going to hit him with a car," she said. Demir wanted to reassure the public that the bear would not be harmed by TPWD at any step in the process. The agency has a tiered threat level system. If the hazing is unsuccessful, policy dictates that the bear should be relocated. If authorities agree that's the best plan of action, he'll be humanely trapped and dropped off at Black Gap Wildlife Management Area, just east of the national park. We'll be making sure the individual is as comfortable as possible on his road trip, she said. She also noted that the bear has not exhibited any threatening behavior towards humans or other animals. That's especially important in a dog haven like Terlingua. Demir said there could be a negative interaction if a dog were to corner a bear, but so far this bear hasn't seemed interested in the town's free-roaming canines. Demir thinks many people in the region will eventually have to adopt bear-safe lifestyles. It takes a community to come together and become bear-wise, she said. As the black bear population repopulates their historic range, we need to start putting these habits into practice. Moore agreed. In her 39 years of living among the ruins, she's never seen a bear in her neighborhood, but she didn't think this one would be the last. Both the bear and the tourist populations have ballooned beyond her cohort's wildest predictions. I don't think any of us ever expected that Terlingua Ghost Town would have a problem, she said. But I really think this is just the beginning. A guide to bear hazing and bear-safe waste disposal for the general public is available online at Texas Parks and Wildlife's Trans-Pecos District Facebook page. To report sightings of the bear, please contact Texas Parks and Wildlife at 432-837-2051. Marfa School Board reviews campus security, bond results, potential four-day school week. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa Independent School Board of Trustees met for a regular meeting on Monday night in which they discussed the unfavorable results of the November 8th bond election, school security grants, and what it would look like for the district to switch from a 5 to a 4-day instructional week. All board members and Superintendent Oscar Aguero were present. Aguero kicked off the meeting with his superintendent's report, stating that the Shorthorn Gym roof repairs and new carpet installation for the auditorium were recently completed. Aguero said the district would soon be applying for 2 new safety grants through the Texas Education Agency, TEA, one for $200,000 for district safety improvements and another for $1,000 for a silent panic button, which would alert law enforcement to an emergency situation. The funds will come from the state, which announced in late October the allocation of $400 million in funding to assist school districts in replacing or upgrading doors, windows, fencing, communications, and other safety measures. The district will be limited in how it can spend the funds. Aguero said the district would soon begin wiring for its new internal and external security cameras, which should be up and running by Christmas break. No news regarding the school resource officer, SRO, was available, but Aguero said they would begin seeking candidates with the city soon. Next, he opened up the floor for discussion from board members about the $57 million school bond, which failed to pass in the general election last week. Board member Lori Flores said several people who were in favor of the bond visited her office at the city to apologize for those who did not vote to support it, and moving forward, she was curious to hear from more of the naysayers. Why were they against it? What can we do to inform them better? Asked Flores. Board President Teresa Nunez said, after seeing a number of other school bonds pass in the West Texas region, including Rankin ISD, whose bond didn't involve a tax increase, McCamey ISD, which passed a $71.8 million bond for new facilities, and Fort Stockton, Fort Stockton ISD, which passed two bond propositions, one for $84 million and another for $16 million, it seemed like, in comparison, the community of Marfa simply wasn't as invested in its kids. I feel like this is more of a tourist town that focuses on tourism. I think they need to stop and realize that we are Marfa. We do have school here. We do have families that live here. I just think we're a different culture over here, said Nunez. She said she thought the board did a good job of spreading the message of the need for the bond, but money and an increase in property values ultimately played a larger role in the public's decision-making. Board member Yolanda Jurado echoed Nunez's sentiments that the messaging from the board was solid, but the community's priorities as a whole currently lie elsewhere. In this West Texas region, we're the only ones that didn't pass, and we were probably the ones that needed it more than anyone else, said Jurado. We don't focus on kids. We're begging people to come to games and begging them to get involved with the kids. The focus is not on children, and that's heartbreaking. Nunez said another area that might have hurt the district in the bond election was the fact that the school district, which operated a separate school bond election adjacent to the main election at the polling location, was not open to voters on the Saturday of early voting, which the Presidio County Democratic Party petitioned to have added to the voting schedule. Nunez said the district might also consider reaching out more aggressively to the local arts community and appealing to a broader audience in the future. We need to bring the focus back to our children, back to the community, she said. We just need to reach out and make sure that everybody in Marfa is going to be included in building the school. If the district decides to go out for the bond again, and if they opt to do so as soon as the May 2023 election, they will need to order the election by a deadline of February 17, 2023. The board held a public hearing relating to their recent financial integrity system rating from the TEA, a metric designed to hold public schools accountable for their financial integrity. For the 2021-22 school year, the district received a 90 score, which is considered an A and a superior rating. Aguero explained that the year prior, the district received a 100, but lost 10 points because enrollment has declined, but staff levels have remained the same. The meeting concluded with preliminary talks regarding a four-day school week. Aguero said he was meeting with teachers one-on-one to learn more about their needs and, in doing so, discovered a common theme. Many wished they had more time to plan and meet with team members. The concept he presented proposed a four-day school week for students and a five-day work week for staffs and teachers. The district could have school Mondays through Thursdays on the new schedule, with Friday being a flexible day for teacher planning and more. As long as we have 75,600 minutes of instruction, it doesn't matter how many days of school we have. The only thing we have is 187 workdays for teachers, said Aguero. If a four-day week were adopted, the district would likely need to extend school hours Monday through Thursday from 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. or 7:50 a.m. to 4:20 p.m. to allow for a little bit of extra instructional time each day. The mix-up could also mean the school year is extended to start earlier in the fall and end later in the summer, so that the end of the year is the Friday after Memorial Day. Aguero said, as it is now, the district sometimes has to combine classes on Fridays due to staffing shortages, which causes meaningful instruction to halt, and the four-day week could be a solution. Fridays could also serve as a time for students who failed the START test to do mandatory tutoring hours. Aguero said the schedule might also serve as a valuable incentive when recruiting new teachers. Board members discussed how the schedule would affect athletics games and activities that take place on Fridays, and how the change might affect cafeteria and janitorial staff. All agreed more data, like feedback from other smaller districts who have changed to the 4-day week, was needed before making a decision. Nunez expressed concern that public perception of the 4-day week would negatively impact a potential bond proposal. Aguero said he was hoping the board would be able to make a decision on the potential 4-day week by January, and said he would seek more feedback from staff now, knowing the idea was plausible. Presidio County gets Colonial Water Planning Boost, plans water district election. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. At last Thursday's meeting, the Presidio County Commissioner's Court tackled two topics crucial to the county's water supply: a large grant for Colonial Water Infrastructure funding and approval for a special election to make the Presidio County Underground Water District a taxing entity. Back in August, Presidio County applied for a grant to address the water supply in Las Pampas Colonia, a small community north of Presidio that developers parceled and sold with the promise that water services would eventually be built, but never were. Residents of Las Pampas must drive 10 miles into town to fill up with the water they need for household use. Las Pampas is just one of 67 communities in Texas identified by the Texas Department of Agriculture as a colonia. There are many more. A 2015 report from the Rural Community Assistance Partnership estimated that over 2,000 colonias exist along the U.S.-Mexico border. Colonias started appearing in 1970s as a way to attract low-wage Mexican workers to settle down on the American side of the border without providing housing that measured up to American standards. The residents of Las Pampas represent a small sliver of the 134,000 colonia residents nationwide who live without public water and wastewater systems. Many colonias are located a stone's throw away from existing water infrastructure, but just haven't been hooked up yet. Las Pampas is a logistically challenging project due to its distance from town. The city of Presidio's current water infrastructure stops 1.3 miles short of Presidio Leli Airport, and much of the colonia is located 5 miles up the road. Presidio County was ultimately awarded a Rural Development Block Grant Program targeting colonia development in a 24-county region that includes much of the Trans-Pecos region in West Texas, and tapped the lead county on the project. The first step of the process, funded by the grant, is soliciting and carrying out water studies to identify potential solutions to the water crises in each colonia. County Judge Cinderella Guevara announced on Thursday that the county would be receiving an additional $200,000 through the grant, raising the total amount from $420,000 to $620,000. That's great news, said Precinct 3 Commissioner Eloy Aranda, who represents the colonia's residents west of Highway 67. Next, the commissioners heard a proposal from Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District, PCUWCD, Chairman Trey Gerfers, to hold a special election on May 6, 2022. The election will determine if the PCUWCD can become a taxing entity rather than receiving money directly from the county. Garfers made it clear that the measure would not raise property taxes and would instead shift the pool of money the organization draws from, a tax swap, in his words. Garfers' board approved the election in October, but needed the county's approval to make it official. County Attorney Rod Pontone explained that the election was necessary to continue to guarantee funding for the PCUWCD. Thanks to a piece of unfinished business from 1999, a ballot initiative that failed to detail the necessary information designating the organization's tax status, the county's current arrangement is in violation of the law. Pontone explained that enabling the PCUWCD to become a taxable entity was the best move for Presidio County residents. The taxpayer won't see any change in the amount of money that they pay, he explained. It's just letting the water be protected and allowing the district to be self-sustaining. The election will be held on May 6, 2023. In the meantime, Garfers said a public information campaign, including town hall discussions, would be the best way to inform voters about the importance of the switch. It's important to support. Water is an important resource, said Judge Guevada. Hector Flores Jr. re-arrested as he appeals judgment in BBNP child endangerment case. By Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBenSentinel.com. Pecos. Hector Flores Jr., the Fort Stockton man found guilty of child endangerment after vanishing with his young daughter in Big Bend National Park earlier this year, has been arrested for violating the terms of his probation as he moves to appeal the court's judgment. After being found guilty by a Pecos jury, Flores was sentenced in September to 5 years probation and was ordered by U.S. District Judge David Counts to undergo psychological evaluation, mental health treatment, and parenting classes. Flores' attorney, Shane O'Neill, has appealed the conviction to the Fifth Circuit of Appeals. At the time of the sentencing, O'Neill told the Big Bend Sentinel that he would appeal the judgment on the grounds that Flores' 9-year-old daughter was not placed in imminent physical danger when her father took her into Big Bend National Park and crossed with her into Mexico on foot. On October 24th, court records show, Judge Counts issued a warrant for Flores' arrest on the grounds that he had violated the terms of his probation, which forbade the unlawful use of or possession of a controlled substance, and the possession of firearms. In a drug test, Flores tested positive for cocaine, and a home search revealed several rifles in his possession, according to a petition filed with the court. Flores was arrested in San Antonio and ordered on November 9th to be returned to Pecos, where his case resides. Flores became the subject of a multi-agency cross-border manhunt in February when he and his daughter, identified in court documents as LF, were declared missing after entering Big Bend National Park. Their car and personal items were found off Old Ore Road, a very remote part of the park, and the pair were found over a week later by Mexican authorities on the other side of the border, near Boquillas del Carmen. FBI agent Alice Downey, who assisted in the investigation, testified that they had to traverse at least 20 miles of rugged desert terrain, sometimes in sub-freezing temperatures, to reach the border, and that Flores and the child did not have adequate clothing, food, or water. LF had told authorities that they ran out of food 3 days into the journey. Downey also testified that Flores seemed to have planned the excursion in advance. He had checked out survivalist books from the library expressed a desire to live off the grid and pulled his daughter out of school in January. But while the prosecution argued that Flores had intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or with criminal negligence, taken part in activities that put his daughter in imminent danger, O'Neill argued that Flores undertook the journey on foot into Mexico because his car broke down and that LF was never in any real physical danger, having not been hospitalized upon discovery. The appeals process remains in the early stages. As for the probation violation, Flores' probation officer has recommended the terms of his supervision be revoked. Flores awaits a hearing at which the probation will either be continued or revoked.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, November 17, 2022. Man charged with assault of elderly by Nathan Heuer. A 52-year-old Missouri man was arrested and booked in the Pecos County Jail on November 12th on charges for assaulting his wife and his parents-in-law, according to the Pecos County Sheriff's Office. Law enforcement responded to a domestic disturbance call at approximately 8:45 p.m. on Saturday at a campground 2 miles east of Fort Stockton. Upon arrival, Deputy Victoria Hamilton conducted an investigation and observed bodily injury to the victims. Darren John Lee Kistler of Henderson, Missouri, was then arrested at 9:15 p.m. and charged with one count of assault causes bodily injury, family violence, and two counts of assault against elderly or disabled. Kistler received $5,000 bonds for each charge and is still in the county jail. According to Pecos County Sheriff T.J. Perkins, both of Kistler's parents-in-law were over the age of 65. Both assault against elderly or disabled charges will be filed with the 83rd District Court and are third-degree felony charges. The assault causes bodily injury family violence charge is a Class A misdemeanor and will be filed with the county court, Perkins said. An individual found guilty of a felony on a third degree shall be punished by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 10 years or less than 2, according to Section 224. A person found guilty of a Class A misdemeanor faces up to 12 months in jail and a $4,000 maximum fine. A Christmas Story brings something new to FSCT. The Fort Stockton Community Theater's Paisano Players will perform A Christmas Story, adapted by Philip Grecian from the screenplay by Gene Shepard. The show will be performed from December 8th to 11th at the Nelson Street Theater. Thursday and Friday, the performances will be at 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, the performances will be at 2 p.m. Doors will open 30 minutes before curtain. Reba Subia is making her directorial debut with Fort Stockton Community Theater. She's assisted by Stacy Schoenfeld. Tickets for the show may now be purchased online with your credit card by going to fscommunitytheater.org, clicking on Shows, clicking on A Christmas Story, choosing the date you wish to attend, and following the directions. You do not have to be a member of the PlayPal to purchase tickets. You will get a receipt, which is your ticket. The theater will receive a list of those who have purchased tickets in case you lose your receipt. Tickets will still be available at the door for cash or check. For assigned seats, call Alice Dirksen at 336-3180. On Saturday and Sunday afternoons, December 11th and 12th, the theater's annual cookie sale, organized by Ruben Gonzalez, will be held in FMH Meeting Hall from 12:30 to 1:45. And then after the play, there will be $20 and $30 boxes to be filled, and 3 cookies may be selected for $5. Cookies are homemade and make great Christmas gifts. Mark your calendars for an evening or afternoon of entertainment by the Paisano Players. City Adopts Home Rule Charter by Sean Yorks. Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander did something Tuesday night no mayor of Fort Stockton has done. He voted on an agenda item. The Fort Stockton City Council canvassed the votes in the November 8th election, which included the adoption for or against making Fort Stockton a home rule charter city, then adopted Resolution 22-117, which made Fort Stockton a home rule charter city. "We are officially a home rule charter city," Alexander declared after the council voted 4-0 to adopt the resolution. A total of 1,996 votes were cast November 8th with Home Rule Charter Resolution passing 1,198 for to 798 against. One of the immediate charges is that the mayor can now vote on agenda items, which he did on the next agenda item following the passage of the resolution. Councilman Reuben Falcon recognized the citizens who attempted to adopt a home rule charter twice in the 70s and again in 2012, as well as the council who decided to move forward with it last year, forward-thinking members of the community, and the city staff and attorneys who did all the research. "It's a good thing for our city," the mayor added. "I'm very, very happy it passed." The council then awarded a bid to LT Construction for the addition to restrooms to the Fort Stockton Convention Center, inside the Convention Center near the old bar area, and at the new Hodges Pavilion being constructed adjacent to the Convention Center. The inside restrooms were bid at $121,242, and the outside restrooms at the pavilion were bid at $142,485. The bid was awarded by a 5-0 vote, with Alexander casting his first vote as mayor under the new Home Rule Charter. The outside restroom addition agreement also passed 5-0. In other action, the council approved contractual janitorial service agreements with Alfida Morales for the City Hall and the City Hall Annex, and with Abiud Olivares for the Police Department and Dispatch Area. Approved 1,800 feet of sewer line installation between the city's 4A Economic Development Corp and Transpacus Energy Solutions. The pipe will extend from the current manhole cover in front of the stripes at the corner of US 285 and I-10, 1,800 feet along this highway. The total cost is over $354,000. Voted to use American Rescue Funds for emergency repairs to the 8-inch sewer line at 6th and Gatlin, with repair of the 60-year-old pipe starting the first week of December. Appointed Veronica Lopez Carrasco and Ross Harper to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and Lopez Carrasco and Patty Morales to the Housing Authority Board. The next council meeting will take place December 12th and will be the only meeting in December. County approves bids for hailstorm roof repairs by Sean Yorks. The October 10th hailstorm did a number on several county buildings in Imperial and Kyanosa, and the Pecos County Commissioners Court on November 14th approved bids for roof repairs at three buildings. The county received two bids for each building, but the bids were tabled at the October 24th meeting in order to see if one of the bidders would offer a warranty on their work. The county accepted the bids from Triple R Welding of Fort Stockton on November 14th in order to move forward with repairs to the Imperial Sheriff's Station, the Boy Scout Building, the Old Community Building in Kyanosa, and the Imperial Volunteer Fire Department Building. The bid for the Imperial Sheriff's Building, Scout Building, was for $9,000, and the Kyanosa Community Building was for $17,000. The bid for the Imperial Volunteer Fire Department was for $41,000 to remove and replace the metal roof, gutter system, and do interior ceiling repairs. The Commissioner's Court also approved a request by the Buena Vista Independent School District in Imperial to Lincoln Street from Imperial Canal number 5 north of Imperial Street. Buena Vista Superintendent Mason Kyle said the district recognizes the need for an option for foot traffic to access the new buildings to be constructed, and also requested that Washington Street be paved and connected to the new building. The court unanimously approved the request. Additionally, the court had entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Fort Stockton Independent School District for members of the Guardian program to use the county shooting range at 131 County Road 3386. the Guardian program, or school staff who carry firearms on campus that have undergone extensive Guardian training are selected by campus and school district leadership, maintain a concealed handgun license, and maintain handgun qualifications on an annual basis. The agreement is valid for 5 years.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, November 10th. Carrillo held on $50,000 bond after stabbing father. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man accused of allegedly stabbing his father several times remains behind bars in the Ward County Jail, held on a $50,000 bond. Adrian Carrillo, age 37, of 305 North Dwight Street, was arrested on November 6th after authorities were called to the residence he shares with his father in reference to a disturbance. Officers responded to the 300 block of North Dwight around 7:18 p.m. on November 6th. Quote, when officers Richard Allen, Eric DeAnda, and Lorenzo Colon arrived, they entered the residence and found the suspect and his father in another room. Carrillo's father was covered in blood, Monahans Police Department Lieutenant Stormy Laws said. The 58-year-old was transported to Ward Memorial Hospital, then airlifted to Odessa to be treated for injuries he sustained during the attack. After officers spoke with the victim, Carrillo was subsequently taken into custody. Carrillo is being charged with aggravated assault, family violence with a weapon, a first-degree felony. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of 5 to 99 years or life and a fine not to exceed $10,000.
Waterline break prompts Grand Falls to issue water boil advisory. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A waterline break from a main line prompted the city of Grand Falls officials to issue a water boil advisory to residents last Wednesday evening. City employees were out on daily rounds checking streets when they were notified by a resident of water coming up from the ground in an alleyway. Quote, this road isn't a paved road or one we usually check on our rounds, so I had to pull the maps to determine if it was possibly an old tap or a main line that ran under the road, City Utilities Operator Tony Ariola said. Ariola determined that it was a main line under the dirt road. Quote, once we dug through the dirt and got to the line, we noticed the valve on top of the pipe was rusted, Ariola said. City workers were going to try to replace the valve without turning off the pump, but once the valve was removed, the 2-inch line broke. Quote, once the valve was removed, the line broke. There was too much pressure coming through the line with the pump on, so we knew we were going to have to shut down the pump to fix the line and valve, he said. After speaking to City of Monahans Director of Utilities Bobby Sinclair and Field Supervisor Keith Mitchell with the City of Monahans, they were advised to issue a boil water notice for the residents due to the low distribution pressure. Once the notice was issued, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality was also notified as per state regulation. City of Grand Falls City Secretary Shelby Cahill told the news, along with the TCEQ, notices were put up at City Hall, the post office, and social media. City workers have fixed the break temporarily and are hopeful the line will be completely fixed by the end of the week. Quote, the necessary parts needed to fix the line are currently on back order, but we have temporarily fixed the line with a compression sleeve and valve. We are expecting the parts within the next few days, Ariola said. According to TCEQ requirements, several samples will have to be taken and tested before the boil water notice is lifted. Residents are encouraged to either purchase bottled water or boil and cool city water before any consumption. This includes uses like hand or face washing, brushing teeth, drinking, cooking, making ice, and more. Quote, customers will be notified when the notice is lifted, Cahill added. Any question can be directed to Cahill at 432-547-2331 or Areola at 432-257-7191. Public hearings set on two dilapidated properties. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Monahans City Council will hold public hearings later this month on two rundown properties in order to declare the homes to be demolished. Council members voted unanimously to hold the hearings during the regularly scheduled council meeting on Tuesday. The homes, located at 805 East 2nd Street and 1003 South Bruce, have both been long-running nuisance properties for the city. Owner of 805 East 2nd Street, Seno Nunez, has agreed to sign a consent to clean. Quote, when a property owner signs a consent for the city to clean their property, a lien is put on the home based on third-party fair market value, which will have to be paid if the property is ever sold, City Manager Rex Thee said. Both homes have previously been damaged to a fire and are currently uninhabited. The public hearings will be held at 3 p.m. on November 22nd in the council chambers. Anyone is invited to attend and speak for or against the properties being demolished. After the hearing, if council members vote the properties to be demolished, the owner will then be ordered to demolish the house within 10 days. Quote, if the owner doesn't comply with the order and demolish the house within 10 days, then the city will step in and demolish it. The city will then obtain a lien on the home for the cost of the demolition, Thee added. Along with Thee, present were council members Jeppy Wilson, Ivy Valenzuela, Calvin Carroll, and Richard Hawkins, as well as Mayor Adam Steen. Councilmember Rudy Hernandez was absent. In other business, council members approved the monthly code enforcement report submitted by Director of Public Works Richard Covington. The report submitted reflected five notices given for violation of garbage, trash, and weeds. Of those issued, four have complied: 1108 South Calvin, 709 South Franklin, 900 South Calvin, and 1512 South Bruce. The owner of the final property, 2100 South Betty, agreed to sign a consent to clean, therefore a lien will be placed on the property. Another three notices were issued for dangerous structures to 2101 South Betty, 2105 South Alice, and 518 West 4th Street. The owner of 2105 South Alice has since passed away. 2101 South Alice's owner appealed for more time, and the last property was issued a second notice. The next step for that property will be filing with municipal court. The report was approved as submitted. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m., Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The Council will meet again on November 22nd in the Council Chambers of City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street, at 3 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. Spencer indicted for assaulting girlfriend and kids. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man, who allegedly assaulted his girlfriend and children in July, has been indicted on three felony charges. The grand jury of the 143rd Judicial District handed down the indictments for Christopher Devon Spencer, age 30, of 103 East 15th Street,
on October 26th, charging him with abandoning or endangering a child in imminent danger, a state jail felony, injury to a child or elderly or disabled with intent to harm, a third-degree felony, and for assaulting a family or household member with previous conviction, a third-degree felony. The arrest came after an unknown incident between Spencer and his girlfriend on July 7th allegedly led to violence at their home in the 600 block of 3rd Street in Grand Falls. Around 12:30 p.m., deputies were dispatched to the home in reference to an assault and learned Spencer assaulted his girlfriend and a child under the age of 14. According to the indictments, Spencer knowingly caused bodily harm to Tiffany Rodriguez, whom he was in a relationship with, by twisting her left arm. Spencer was also charged with causing injury to a child younger than 15 by punching the child in the back of the head while the child was holding another child, which caused the child being held to fall to the floor. Spencer intentionally caused injury to a second child under the age of 14 by punching the child in the back of the head and kicking the child in the ribs. Spencer has previously been convicted of assaulting a woman he was dating in Lubbock County in October of 2021. Bond for Spencer was set at $45,000 for all three charges, and he was released after posting the bond. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 10 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Bonda, indicted for sexual assault of a child. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man who found himself behind bars this past March for allegedly having an ongoing sexual relationship with a female victim under the age of 16 has now been indicted on the charge. The grand jury for the 143rd Judicial District returned an indictment charging Ernest Bonda, age 55, of 1409 West 1A, with sexual assault of a child, a second-degree felony, on October 26th. Bonda was originally picked up on the charge after officers were called to Monahans High School by one of the counselors who said a report was made about a juvenile under the age of 16 who has been in an ongoing sexual relationship with a man for the past year. After the allegation was made, officers spoke to the juvenile, who then admitted to the relationship and named Bonda as the suspect. The victim admitted she and Bonda have had sexual intercourse on multiple occasions for about a year. Bonda would not answer investigators in regards to the charges. An arrest warrant for Bonda was granted on March 14th. He was subsequently arrested and taken to Ward County Jail and was released after posting a $50,000 bond. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for a term of 2 to 20 years in prison and a fine not to exceed $10,000.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.